His lead in this year's title race. His Red Bull teammate Mark Webber was second, with Ferrari's Fernando Alonso third. BBC News.
Now we travel to the Lake District, the home of William Wordsworth, where Sir Ian McKellen reads from The Prelude, Wordsworth's autobiography in verse.
Oh, there is blessing in this gentle breeze that blows from the green fields and from the clouds and from the sky. It beats against my cheek and seems half conscious of the joy it gives. Oh, welcome, messenger. Oh, welcome, friend. A captive greets thee, coming from a house of bondage, from yon city's walls set free, a prison where he hath been long immured. Now I am free, enfranchised, and at large. They fix my habitation where I will. What dwelling shall receive me? In what vale shall be my harbour? Underneath what grove shall I take up my home, and what sweet stream shall with its murmurs lull me to my rest? The earth is all before me. With a heart joyous, nor scared at its own liberty, I look about, and should the guide I choose be nothing better than a wandering cloud, I cannot miss my way. I breathe again. Trances of thought and mountings of the mind come fast upon me. It is shaken off as by miraculous gift, 'tis shaken off, that burthen of my own unnatural self. The heavy weight of many a weary day, not mine, and such as were not made for me. Long months of peace, if such bold word accord with any promises of human life, long months of ease and undisturbed delight are mine in prospect. Whither shall I turn? By road or pathway or through open field, or shall a twig or any floating thing upon the river point me out my course? Enough that I am free. For months to come may dedicate myself to chosen tasks, may quit the tiresome sea and dwell on shore, if not a settler on the soil, at least to drink wild water and to pluck green herbs and gather fruits fresh from their native tree. Nay more, if I may trust myself, this hour hath brought a gift that consecrates my joy. For I methought, while the sweet breath of heaven was blowing on my body, felt within a corresponding, mild, creative breeze, a vital breeze which travelled gently on o'er things which it had made, and is become a tempest, a redundant energy vexing its own creation. 'Tis a power that does not come unrecognised, a storm which, breaking up a long-continued frost, brings with it vernal promises, the hope of active days, of dignity and thought, of prowess in an honourable field, pure passions, virtue, knowledge and delight, the holy life of music and of verse. Thus far, O friend, did I, not used to make a present joy the matter of my song, pour out that day my soul in measured strains, even in the very words which I have here recorded. To the open fields I told a prophecy. Poetic numbers came spontaneously, and clothed in priestly robe, my spirit thus singled out, as it might seem, for holy services. Great hopes were mine. My own voice cheered me, and far more the mind's internal echo of the imperfect sound. To both I listened, drawing from them both a cheerful confidence in things to come. Whereat, being not unwilling now to give a respite to this passion, I paced on, gently, with careless steps, and came ere long to a green shady place where down I sat beneath a tree, slackening my thoughts by choice, and settling into gentler happiness. 'Twas autumn, and a calm and placid day, with warmth as much as needed from a sun 2 hours declined towards the west, a day with silver clouds and sunshine on the grass, and in the sheltered grove where I was couched, a perfect stillness. On the ground I lay, passing through many thoughts, yet mainly such as to myself pertained. I made a choice of one sweet vale whither my steps should turn, and saw, methought, the very house and fields present before my eyes. Nor did I fail to add meanwhile assurance of some work of glory, there forthwith to be begun, perhaps too there performed. Thus long I lay, cheered by the genial pillow of the earth beneath my head, soothed by a sense of touch from the warm ground that balanced me, else lost entirely, seeing naught, naught hearing, save when here and there, about the grove of oaks where was my bed, an acorn from the trees fell audibly, and with a startling sound. Thus occupied in mind, I lingered here contented, nor rose up until the sun had almost touched the horizon, bidding then a farewell to the city left behind. Even with the chance equipment of that hour, I journeyed towards the vale which I had chosen. It was a splendid evening, and my soul did once again make trial of the strength restored to her afresh. Nor did she want Aeolian visitations, but the harp was soon defrauded, and the banded host of harmony dispersed in straggling sounds, and lastly, utter silence. "Be it so. It is an injury," said I, "to this day to think of anything but present joy." So, like a peasant, I pursued my road beneath the evening sun, nor had one wish again to bend the Sabbath of that time to a servile yoke. What need of many words? A pleasant, loitering journey, through 2 days continued, brought me to my hermitage. I spare to speak, my friend, of what ensued, the admiration and the love, the life in common things, the endless store of things rare, or at least so seeming, every day found all about me in one neighbourhood, the self-congratulation, the complete composure, and the happiness entire. But speedily a longing in me rose to brace myself to some determined aim, reading or thinking, either to lay up new stores or rescue from decay the old by timely interference, I had hopes still higher that with a frame of outward life I might endue, might fix in a visible home some portion of those phantoms of conceit that had been floating loose about so long, and to such beings temperately deal forth the many feelings that oppressed my heart. But I have been discouraged. Gleams of light flash often from the east, then disappear and mock me with a sky that ripens not into a steady morning. If my mind, remembering the sweet promise of the past, would gladly grapple with some noble theme, vain is her wish. But ere she turns, she finds impediments from day to day renewed. And now it would content me to yield up those lofty hopes awhile for present gifts of humbler industry, to stray about voluptuously through fields and rural walks, and ask no record of the hours, given up to vacant musing, unreproved neglect of all things, and deliberate holiday. Far better never to have heard the name of zeal and just ambition than to live thus baffled by a mind that every hour turns recreant to her task, takes heart again, then feels immediately some hollow thought hang like an interdict upon her hopes. This is my lot, for either still I find some imperfection in the chosen theme, or see of absolute accomplishment much wanting, so much wanting in myself, that I recoil and droop, and seek repose in indolence from vain perplexity, unprofitably travelling towards the grave, like a false steward who hath much received and renders nothing back. Was it for this that one, the fairest of all rivers, loved to blend his murmurs with my nurse's song, and from his alder shades and rocky falls, and from his fords and shallows, sent a voice that flowed along my dreams? For this didst thou, O Derwent, travelling over the green plains near my sweet birthplace, didst thou, beauteous stream, makes ceaseless music through the night and day, which with its steady cadence, tempering our human waywardness, composed my thoughts to more than infant softness, giving me among the fretful dwellings of mankind a knowledge, a dim earnest of the calm which nature breathes among the hills and groves. When, having left his mountains, to the towers of Cockermouth that beauteous river came, behind my father's house he passed close by along the margin of our terrace walk. He was a playmate whom we dearly loved. Oh, many a time have I, a 5 years child, a naked boy, in one delightful rill, a little millrace severed from his stream, made one long bathing of a summer's day, basked in the sun and plunged, and basked again, alternate all a summer's day, or coursed over the sandy fields, leaping through groves of yellow grunsel, or when crag and hill, the woods and distant Skiddaw's lofty height were bronzed with a deep radiance, stood alone beneath the sky, as if I had been born on Indian plains, and from my mother's hut had run abroad in wantonness to sport a naked savage in the thunder shower. Fair seed time had my soul, and I grew up fostered alike by beauty and by fear. Much favoured in my birthplace, and no less in that beloved vale to which ere long I was transplanted. Well I call to mind, 'twas at an early age, ere I had seen 9 summers, when upon the mountain slope the frost and breath of frosty wind had snapped the last autumnal crocus, 'twas my joy to wander half the night among the cliffs and the smooth hollows where the woodcocks ran along the open turf. In thought and wish that time, my shoulder all with springes hung, I was a fell destroyer. On the heights, scudding away from snare to snare, I plied my anxious visitation, hurrying on, still hurrying, hurrying onward. Moon and stars were shining o'er my head. I was alone and seemed to be a trouble to the peace that was among them. Sometimes it befell in these night wanderings that a strong desire overpowered my better reason, and the bird which was the captive of another's toils became my prey. And when the deed was done, I heard among the solitary hills low breathings coming after me, and sounds of undistinguishable motion, steps almost as silent as the turf they trod. Nor less in springtime, when on southern banks the shining sun had from her knot of leaves decoyed the primrose flower, and when the vales and woods were warm, was I a plunderer then in the high places, on the lonesome peaks, where'er among the mountains and the winds the mother bird had built her lodge. Though mean my object and inglorious, yet the end was not ignoble. Oh, when I have hung above the raven's nest by knots of grass and half-inch fissures in the slippery rock, but ill-sustained and almost, as it seemed, suspended by the blast which blew amain, shouldering the naked crag. Oh, at that time, while on the perilous ridge I hung alone, with what strange utterance did the loud, dry wind blow through my ears? The sky seemed not a sky of earth, and with what motion moved the clouds. The mind of man is framed even like the breath and harmony of music. There is a dark, invisible workmanship that reconciles discordant elements and makes them move in one society. Ah me, that all the terrors, all the early miseries, regrets, vexations, lassitudes, that all the thoughts and feelings which have been infused into my mind should ever have made up the calm existence that is mine when I am worthy of myself. Praise to the end. Thanks likewise for the means. But I believe that nature oftentimes, when she would frame a favoured being, from his earliest dawn of infancy doth open out the clouds, as at the touch of lightning, seeking him with gentlest visitation. Not the less, though haply aiming at the selfsame end, does it delight her sometimes to employ severer interventions, ministry more palpable, and so she dealt with me. One evening, surely I was led by her, I went alone into a shepherd's boat, a skiff that to a willow tree was tied within a rocky cave, its usual home. 'Twas by the shores of Patterdale, a vale wherein I was a stranger, thither come a schoolboy traveller at the holidays. Forth rambled from the village inn alone, no sooner had I sight of this small skiff, discovered thus by unexpected chance, than I unloosed her tether and embarked. The moon was up, the lake was shining clear among the hoary mountains. From the shore I pushed, and struck the oars, and struck again in cadence. And my little boat moved on, even like a man who moves with stately step, though bent on speed. It was an act of stealth and troubled pleasure. Nor without the voice of mountain echoes did my boat move on, leaving behind her still on either side small circles glittering idly in the moon until they melted all into one track of sparkling light. A rocky steep uprose above the cavern of the willow tree, and now, as suited one who proudly rowed with his best skill, I fixed a steady view upon the top of that same craggy ridge, the bound of the horizon, for behind was nothing but the stars and the grey sky. She was an elfin pinnace. Lustily I dipped my oars into the silent lake, and as I rose upon the stroke, my boat went heaving through the water like a swan, when from behind that craggy steep, till then the bound of the horizon, a huge cliff, as if with voluntary power instinct, upreared its head. I struck and struck again, and growing still in stature, the huge cliff rose up between me and the stars, and still with measured motion, like a living thing, strode after me. With trembling hands I turned, and through the silent water stole my way back to the cavern of the willow tree. There, in her mooring place, I left my bark, and through the meadows homeward went with grave and serious thoughts. And after I had seen that spectacle for many days, my brain worked with a dim and undetermined sense of unknown modes of being. In my thoughts there was a darkness, call it solitude, or blank desertion. No familiar shapes of hourly objects, images of trees, of sea, or sky, no colours of green fields, but huge and mighty forms that do not live like living men, moved slowly through my mind by day and were the trouble of my dreams. Wisdom and spirit of the universe, thou soul that art the eternity of thought, that gives to forms and images a breath and everlasting motion. Not in vain, by day or starlight, thus from my first dawn of childhood didst thou intertwine for me the passions that build up our human soul. Not with the mean and vulgar works of man, but with high objects, with enduring things, with life and nature, purifying thus the elements of feeling and of thought, and sanctifying by such discipline both pain and fear, until we recognize a grandeur in the beatings of the heart. Nor was this fellowship vouchsafed to me with stinted kindness. In November days, when vapors rolling down the valleys made a lonely scene more lonesome, among woods at noon, and mid the calm of summer nights, when by the margin of the trembling lake beneath the gloomy hills I homeward went in solitude, such intercourse was mine. 'Twas mine among the fields both day and night, and by the waters all the summer long. And in the frosty season, when the sun was set, and visible for many a mile the cottage windows through the twilight blazed, I heeded not the summons. Happy time it was indeed for all of us. To me, it was a time of rapture. Clear and loud, the village clock tolled six. I wheeled about, proud and exulting, like an untired horse that cares not for its home. All shod with steel, we hissed along the polished ice in games confederate, imitative of the chase, and woodland pleasures, the resounding horn, the pack, loud bellowing, and the hunted hare. So through the darkness and the cold we flew, and not a voice was idle. With the din, meanwhile, the precipices rang aloud. The leafless trees and every icy crag tinkled like iron, while the distant hills into the tumult sent an alien sound of melancholy not unnoticed, while the stars eastward were sparkling clear, and in the west the orange sky of evening died away. Not seldom from the uproar I retired into a silent bay, or sportively glanced sideway, leaving the tumultuous throng to cut across the image of a star that gleamed upon the ice. And oftentimes, when we had given our bodies to the wind, and all the shadowy banks on either side came sweeping through the darkness, spinning still the rapid line of motion, then at once have I, reclining back upon my heels, stopped short. Yet still the solitary cliffs wheeled by me, even as if the earth had rolled with visible motion her diurnal round. Behind me did they stretch in solemn train, feebler and feebler, and I stood and watched till all was tranquil as a dreamless sleep. Ye presences of nature, in the sky or on the earth, ye visions of the hills and souls of lonely places, can I think a vulgar hope was yours when ye employed such ministry? When ye, through many a year, haunting me thus among my boyish sports, on caves and trees, upon the woods and hills, impressed upon all forms the characters of danger or desire, and thus did make the surface of the universal earth with triumph and delight and hope and fear work like a sea. Not uselessly employed, I might pursue this theme through every change of exercise and play to which the year did summon us in its delightful round. Thus far, O friend, have we, though leaving much unvisited, endeavoured to retrace my life through its first years, and measured back the way I travelled when I first began to love the woods and fields. The passion yet was in its birth, sustained, as might befall, by nourishment that came unsought, for still from week to week, from month to month, we lived a round of tumult. Duly were our games prolonged in summer till the daylight failed. No chair remained before the doors. The bench and threshold steps were empty, fast asleep the labourer and the old man who had sat a late lingerer. Yet the revelry continued, and the loud uproar. At last, when all the ground was dark, and the huge clouds were edged with twinkling stars, to bed we went with weary joints and with a beating mind. Ah, is there one who ever has been young and needs a monitory voice to tame the pride of virtue and of intellect? And is there one, the wisest and the best of all mankind, who does not sometimes wish for things which cannot be, who would not give, if so he might, to duty and to truth, the eagerness of infantine desire? A tranquilizing spirit presses now on my corporeal frame. So wide appears the vacancy between me and those days, which yet have such self-presence in my mind that sometimes when I think of it, I seem two consciousnesses, conscious of myself and of some other being. A grey stone of native rock, left midway in the square of our small market village, was the home and centre of these joys. And when returned after long absence, thither I repaired, I found that it was split, and gone to build a smart assembly room that perked and flared with wash and rough cast, elbowing the ground which had been ours. But let the fiddle scream, and be ye happy. Yet, my friends, I know that more than one of you will think with me of those soft, starry nights, and that old dame, from whom the stone was named, who there had sat and watched her table with its huckster's wares assiduous through the length of 60 years. We ran a boisterous race. The year span round with giddy motion. But the time approached that brought with it a regular desire for calmer pleasures, when the beauteous forms of nature were collaterally attached to every scheme of holiday delight, and every boyish sport less grateful else, and languidly pursued. When summer came, it was the pastime of our afternoons to beat along the plain of Windermere with rival oars. And the selected bourne was now an island, musical with birds that sang forever. Now a sister isle, beneath the oak's umbrageous covert, sown with lilies of the valley like a field. And now a third small island, where remained an old stone table and a moulded cave, a hermit's history. In such a race, so ended, disappointment could be none. Uneasiness or pain or jealousy, we rested in the shade, all pleased alike, conquered and conqueror. Thus the pride of strength and the vainglory of superior skill were interfused with objects which subdued and tempered them, and gradually produced a quiet independence of the heart. And to my friend who knows me, I may add, unapprehensive of reproof, that hence ensued a diffidence and modesty, and I was taught to feel, perhaps too much, the self-sufficing power of solitude. No delicate viands sapped our bodily strength. More than we wished, we knew the blessing then of vigorous hunger, for our daily meals were frugal, Sabine fare. And then exclude a little weekly stipend, and we lived through three divisions of the quartered year in penniless poverty. But now to school returned from the half-yearly holidays, we came with purses more profusely filled, allowance which abundantly sufficed to gratify the palate with repasts more costly than the dame of whom I spoke, that ancient woman and her board supplied. Hence inroads into distant vales, and long excursions far away among the hills. Hence rustic dinners on the cool green ground, or in the woods, or near a riverside, or by some shady fountain, while soft airs among the leaves were stirring, and the sun, unfelt, shone sweetly round us in our joy. Nor is my aim neglected if I tell how twice in the long length of those half years we from our funds, perhaps with bolder hand, drew largely, anxious for one day at least, to feel the motion of the galloping steed. And with the good old innkeeper, in truth, on such occasions sometimes we employed sly subterfuge, for the intended bound of the day's journey was too distant far for any cautious man. A structure famed beyond its neighbourhood, the antique walls of that large abbey, which within the veil of nightshade, to St. Mary's honour built, stands yet, a mouldering pile, with fractured arch, belfry, and images, and living trees, a holy scene. Along the smooth green turf our horses grazed, to more than inland peace left by the sea wind passing overhead, though wind of roughest temper, trees and towers may in that valley oftentimes be seen, both silent and both motionless alike. Such is the shelter that is there, and such the safeguard for repose and quietness. Our steeds remounted, and the summons given, with whip and spur we by the chauntry flew in uncouth race, and left the cross-legged knight, and the stone abbot, and that single wren which one day sang so sweetly in the nave of the old church, that though from recent showers the earth was comfortless, and touched by faint internal breezes, sobbings of the place and respirations, from the roofless walls the shuddering ivy dripped large drops, yet still, so sweetly mid the gloom, the invisible bird sang to itself, that there I could have made my dwelling place and lived forever there to hear such music. Through the walls we flew and down the valley and a circuit made in wantonness of heart. Through rough and smooth we scampered homeward. Oh, ye rocks and streams and that still spirit of the evening air. Even in this joyous time I sometimes felt your presence, when with slackened step we breathed along the sides of the steep hills, or when lighted by gleams of moonlight from the sea, we beat with thundering hoofs the level sand. Upon the eastern shore of Windermere, Above the crescent of a pleasant bay, there was an inn. No homely featured shed, brother of the surrounding cottages, but 'twas a splendid place, the door beset with chaises, grooms, and liveries, and within decanters, glasses, and the blood-red wine. In ancient times, or ere the hall was built on the large island, had this dwelling been more worthy of a poet's love, a hut proud of its one bright fire and sycamore shade. But though the rhymes were gone which once inscribed the threshold, and large golden characters on the blue-frosted signboard had usurped the place of the old lion, in contempt and mockery of the rustic painter's hand, yet to this hour the spot to me is dear with all its foolish pomp. The garden lay upon a slope surmounted by the plain of a small bowling green. Beneath us stood a grove, with gleams of water through the trees and over the treetops. Nor did we want refreshment, strawberries and mellow cream. And there through half an afternoon we played on the smooth platform, and the shouts we sent made all the mountains ring. But ere the fall of night, when in our pinnace we returned over the dusky lake, and to the beach of some small island steered our course with one, the minstrel of our troop, and left him there, and rowed off gently while he blew his flute alone upon the rock. Oh, then the calm and dead still water lay upon my mind, even with a weight of pleasure. And the sky, never before so beautiful, sank down into my heart and held me like a dream. Thus daily were my sympathies enlarged, and thus the common range of visible things grew dear to me. Already I began to love the sun. A boy, I loved the sun, not as I since have loved him, as a pledge and surety of our earthly life, a light which, while we view, we feel we are alive, but for this cause, that I had seen him lay his beauty on the morning hills, had seen the western mountain touch his setting orb. In many a thoughtless hour, when from excess of happiness my blood appeared to flow with its own pleasure, and I breathed with joy. And from like feelings, humble though intense, to patriotic and domestic love analogous, the moon to me was dear. For I would dream away my purposes, standing to look upon her while she hung midway between the hills, as if she knew no other region, but belonged to thee, yea, appertained by a peculiar right to thee, and thy grey huts, my darling Vale. Those incidental charms which first attached my heart to rural objects day by day grew weaker, and I hasten on to tell how nature, intervenient till this time and secondary, now at length was sought for her own sake. It was a dreary morning when the chaise rolled over the flat plains of Huntingdon, and through the open windows first I saw the long-backed chapel of King's College rear his pinnacles above the dusky groves. Soon afterwards we espied upon the road a student, clothed in gown and tasselled cap. He passed, nor was I master of my eyes till he was left 100 yards behind. The place, as we approached, seemed more and more to have an eddy's force and sucked us in more eagerly at every step we took. Onward we drove beneath the castle, down by Magdalen Bridge we went, and crossed the Cam, and at the Hoop we landed, famous inn. My spirit was up, my thoughts were full of hope. Some friends I had, acquaintances who there seemed friends, poor simple schoolboys now hung round with honour and importance. In a world of welcome faces up and down I roved. Questions, directions, counsel and advice flowed in upon me from all sides. Fresh day of pride and pleasure. To myself I seemed a man of business and expense, and went from shop to shop about my own affairs, to tutors or to tailors, as befell, from street to street, with loose and careless heart. I was the dreamer, they the dream. I roamed delighted through the motley spectacle, gowns, grave or gaudy, doctors, students, streets, lamps, gateways, flocks of churches, courts and towers, strange transformation for a mountain youth, a northern villager, as if by word of magic or some fairy's power at once behold me rich in monies and attired in splendid clothes with hose of silk and hair glittering like rimy trees when frost is keen. My lordly dressing gown I pass it by, with other signs of manhood which supplied the lack of beard. The weeks went roundly on, with invitations, suppers, wine and fruit, smooth housekeeping within, and all without liberal and suiting gentlemen's array. The evangelist St. John my patron was. Three gloomy courts are his, and in the first was my abiding place, a nook obscure. Right underneath, the college kitchens made a humming sound, less tunable than bees, but hardly less industrious, with shrill notes of sharp command and scolding intermixed. Near me was Trinity's loquacious clock, who never let the quarters, night or day, slip by him unproclaimed, and told the hours twice over with a male and female voice. Her pealing organ was my neighbour too, and from my bedroom I, in moonlight nights, could see right opposite, a few yards off, the antechapel, where the statue stood of Newton with his prism and silent face. Of college labours, of the lecturer's room, all studded round as thick as chairs could stand, with loyal students faithful to their books, half and half idlers, hardy recusants, and honest dunces. Of important days, examinations, when the man was weighed as in the balance. Of excessive hopes, tremblings withal, and commendable fears, small jealousies, and triumphs, good or bad, I make short mention. Things they were which then I did not love, nor do I love them now. Such glory was but little sought by me, and little won. But it is right to say that even so early, from the first crude days of settling time in this my new abode, not seldom I had melancholy thoughts, from personal and family regards, wishing to hope without a hope, some fears about my future worldly maintenance, and more than all, a strangeness in my mind, a feeling that I was not for that hour, nor for that place. But wherefore be cast down? Why should I grieve? I was a chosen son, for hither had I come with holy powers and faculties, whether to work or feel, to apprehend all passions and all moods which time and place and season do impress upon the visible universe, and work like changes there by force of my own mind. I was a free man, in the purest sense was free, and to majestic ends was strong. I do not speak of learning, moral truth or understanding. 'Twas enough for me to know that I was otherwise endowed when the first glitter of the show was past, and the first dazzle of the taper light, as if with a rebound my mind returned into its former self. Oft did I leave my comrades and the crowd, buildings and groves, and walked along the fields, the level fields, with heaven's blue concave reared above my head. And now it was that through such change entire, and this first absence from those shapes sublime wherewith I had been conversant, my mind seemed busier in itself than heretofore. At least I more directly recognized my powers and habits. Let me dare to speak a higher language, say that now I felt the strength and consolation which were mine. As if awakened, summoned, roused, constrained, I looked for universal things, perused the common countenance of earth and heaven, and turning the mind in upon itself, pored, watched, expected, listened, spread my thoughts, and spread them with a wider creeping, felt encumbrances more awful, visitings of the upholder of the tranquil soul which underneath all passion lives secure, a steadfast life, but peace. It is enough to notice that I was ascending now to such community with highest truth. Easily I passed from the remembrances of better things and slipped into the weekday works of youth, unburthened, unalarmed, and unprofaned. Caverns there were within my mind, which sun could never penetrate, yet did there not want store of leafy arbours where the light might enter in at will. Companionships, friendships, acquaintances were welcome all. We sauntered, played, we rioted, we talked unprofitable talk at morning hours, drifted about along the streets and walks, read lazily in lazy books, went forth to gallop through the country in blind zeal of senseless horsemanship, or on the breast of cams sailed boisterously and let the stars come out, perhaps without one quiet thought. Such was the tenor of the opening act in this new life. Imagination slept, and yet not utterly. I could not print ground where the grass had yielded to the steps of generations of illustrious men unmoved. I could not always lightly pass through the same gateways, sleep where they had slept, wake where they waked, range that enclosure old, that garden of great intellects, undisturbed. Beside the pleasant mills of Trompington, I laughed with Chaucer. In the hawthorn shade heard him, while birds were warbling, tell his tales of amorous passion. And that gentle bard, chosen by the muses for their page of state, sweet Spenser, moving through his clouded heaven with the moon's beauty and the moon's soft pace, I called him brother, Englishman, and friend. Yea, our blind poet, who in his later day stood almost single, uttering odious truth, darkness before and danger's voice behind, soul awful, if the earth hath ever lodged an awful soul, I seem to see him here familiarly, and in his scholar's dress bounding before me, yet a stripling youth, a boy no better, with his rosy cheeks, angelical, keen eye, courageous look, and conscious step of purity and pride. Among the band of my compeers was one my class fellow at school, whose chance it was to lodge in the apartments which had been, time out of mind, honoured by Milton's name. The very shell reputed of the abode which he had tenanted. O temperate bard! One afternoon, the first time I set foot in this thy innocent nest and oratory, seated with others in a festive ring of commonplace convention, I to thee poured out libations, to thy memory drank within my private thoughts, till my brain reeled. Never so clouded by the fumes of wine before that hour or since. Thenceforth I ran from that assembly, through a length of streets ran, ostrich-like, to reach our chapel door in not a desperate or opprobrious time, albeit long after the importunate bell had stopped, with wearisome Cassandra voice no longer haunting the dark winter night. Yet was this deep vacation not given up to utter waste? Hitherto I had stood in my own mind remote from human life, at least from what we commonly so name, even as a shepherd on a promontory, who, lacking occupation, looks far forth into the endless sea and rather makes than finds what he beholds. And sure it is that this first transit from the smooth delights and wild outlandish walks of simple youth to something that resembled an approach towards mortal business, to a privileged world within a world, a midway residence with all its intervenient imagery, did better suit my visionary mind, far better than to have been bolted forth, thrust out abruptly into fortune's way, among the conflicts of substantial life, by a more just gradation did lead on to higher things, more naturally matured, for permanent possession, better fruits, whether of truth or virtue, to ensue. Thus in submissive idleness, my friend, the labouring time of autumn, winter, spring, 9 months rolled pleasingly away. The 10th returned me to my native hills again. A pleasant sight it was when, having clomb the heights of Kendal and that dreary moor was crossed, at length, as from a rampart's edge, I overlooked the bed of Windermere. I bounded down the hill, shouting amain a lusty summons to the farther shore for the old ferryman, and when he came, I did not step into the well-known boat without a cordial welcome. Thence right forth I took my way, now drawing towards home, to that sweet valley where I had been reared. It was but a short hour's walk ere, veering round, I saw the snow-white church upon its hill sit like a throned lady, sending out a gracious look all over its domain. Glad greetings had I, and some tears, perhaps, from my old dame, so motherly and good, while she perused me with a parent's pride. The thoughts of gratitude shall fall like dew upon thy grave, good creature, while my heart can beat. I never will forget thy name. Heaven's blessing be upon thee where thou liest. After thy innocent and busy stir in narrow cares, thy little daily growth of calm enjoyments, after 80 years, and more than 80, of untroubled life, childless, yet by the strangers to thy blood honoured with little less than filial love. Great joy was mine to see thee once again, thee and thy dwelling, and a throng of things about its narrow precincts, all beloved, and many of them seeming yet my own. Delighted did I take my place again at our domestic table, and, dear friend, relating simply as my wish hath been a poet's history, can I leave untold the joy with which I laid me down at night in my accustomed bed? More welcome now, perhaps, than if it had been more desired, or been more often thought of with regret. That bed, whence I had heard the roaring wind and clamorous rain, that bed where I so oft had lain awake on breezy nights to watch the moon in splendour couched among the leaves of a tall ash that near our cottage stood, and watched her with fixed eye, while, to and fro, in the dark summit of the moving tree, she rocked with every impulse of the wind. Among the faces which it pleased me well to see again was one by ancient right our inmate, a rough terrier of the hills, by birth and call of nature preordained to hunt the badger and unearth the fox among the impervious crags, but having been from youth our own adopted, he had passed into a gentler service. Those walks did now, like a returning spring, come back on me again. When first I made once more the circuit of our little lake, if ever happiness hath lodged with man, that day consummate happiness was mine, widespreading, steady, calm, contemplative. Thus musing, in a wood I sat me down, continuing there to muse. Meanwhile the mountain heights were slowly overspread with darkness, and before a rippling breeze the long lake lengthened out its hoary line. And in the sheltered coppice where I sat, around me, from among the hazel leaves, now here, now there, stirred by the straggling wind, came intermittingly a breath-like sound, a respiration short and quick, which oft, yea, might I say, again and yet again, mistaking for the panting of my dog, the off-and-on companion of my walk, I turned my head to look if he were there. A freshness also found I at this time in human life, the life, I mean, of those whose occupations really I loved. The prospect often touched me with surprise, crowded and full, and changed, as seemed to me, even as a garden in the heat of spring after an 8 days' absence. The memory of one particular hour doth here rise up against me. In a throng, a festal company of maids and youths, old men and matrons stayed, promiscuous rout, a medley of all tempers, I had passed the night in dancing, gaiety and mirth, with din of instruments and shuffling feet, and glancing forms and tapers glittering, and unnamed prattle flying up and down, spirits upon the stretch, and here and there slight shocks of young love liking interspersed, that mounted up like joy into the head and tingled through the veins. Ere we retired, the cock had crowed, the sky was bright with day. 2 miles I had to walk along the fields before I reached my home. Magnificent the morning was, a memorable pomp. More glorious than I ever had beheld, the sea was laughing at a distance. All the solid mountains were as bright as clouds, grain-tinctured, drenched in empyrean light, and in the meadows and the lower grounds was all the sweetness of a common dawn, dews, vapours, and the melody of birds, and labourers going forth into the fields. Ah, need I say, dear friend, that to the brim my heart was full. I made no vows, but vows were then made for me. Bond unknown to me was given that I should be, Elsining greatly, a dedicated spirit. On I walked in blessedness which even yet remains. There was a boy. Ye knew him well, ye cliffs and islands of Winander. Many a time at evening, when the stars had just begun to move along the edges of the hills, rising or setting, wouldn't he stand alone beneath the trees or by the glimmering lake. And there, with fingers interwoven, both hands pressed closely palm to palm, and to his mouth uplifted, he, as through an instrument, blew mimic hootings to the silent owls, that they might answer him. And they would shout across the watery vale, and shout again, responsive to his call, with quivering peals and long halloos and screams, and echoes loud, redoubled and redoubled, concourse wild of mirth and jocund din. And when it chanced that pauses of deep silence mocked his skill, then sometimes in that silence, while he hung, listening, a gentle shock of mild surprise has carried far into his heart the voice of mountain torrents, or the visible scene would enter unawares into his mind, with all its solemn imagery, its rocks, its woods, and that uncertain heaven received into the bosom of the steady lake. This boy was taken from his mates and died in childhood, ere he was full 10 years old. Fair are the woods, and beauteous is the spot, the vale where he was born. The churchyard hangs upon a slope above the village school, and there, along that bank, when I have passed at evening, I believe that oftentimes a full half-hour together I have stood, mute, looking at the grave in which he lies. Well do I call to mind the very week when I was first entrusted to the care of that sweet valley, when its paths, its shores and brooks were like a dream of novelty to my half-infant thoughts. That very week, while I was roving up and down alone, seeking I knew not what, I chanced to cross one of those open fields which, shaped like ears, make green peninsulas on Esthwaite's lake. Twilight was coming on, yet through the gloom I saw distinctly on the opposite shore a heap of garments, left, as I supposed, by one who there was bathing. Long I watched, but no one owned them. Meanwhile the calm lake grew dark with all the shadows on its breast, and now and then a fish upleaping snapped the breathless stillness. The succeeding day, those unclaimed garments telling a plain tale, went there a company, and in their boat sounded with grappling irons and long poles. At length the dead man, mid that beauteous scene of trees and hills and water, bolt upright rose with his ghastly face, a spectre shape of terror even, and yet no vulgar fear, young as I was, a child not 9 years old, possessed me. For my inner eye had seen such sights before, among the shining streams of fairyland, the forests of romance. Thence came a spirit, hallowing what I saw with decoration and ideal grace, a dignity, a smoothness, like the works of Grecian art and purest poesy. I had a precious treasure at that time, a little yellow canvas-covered book, a slender abstract of the Arabian tales. And when I learned, as now I first did learn from my companions in this new abode, that this dear prize of mine was but a block hewn from a mighty quarry, in a word that there were 4 large volumes, laden all with kindred matter, 'twas in truth to me a promise scarcely earthly. Instantly I made a league, a covenant with a friend of my own age, that we should lay aside the monies we possessed and hoard up more, till our joint savings had amassed enough to make this book our own. Through several months religiously did we preserve that vow, and spite of all temptation, hoarded up and hoarded up. But firmness failed at length, nor were we ever masters of our wish. And afterwards, when to my father's house returning at the holidays, I found that golden store of books which I had left, open to my enjoyment once again, what heart was mine? Full often through the course of those glad respites in the summertime, when armed with rod and line we went abroad for a whole day together, I have lain down by thy side, O Derwent, murmuring stream, on the hot stones and in the glaring sun, and there have read, devouring as I read, defrauding the day's glory, desperate, till with a sudden bound of smart reproach, such as an idler deals with in his shame, I to my sport betook myself again. A gracious spirit o'er this earth presides, and o'er the heart of man. Invisibly it comes, directing those to works of love who care not, know not, think not what they do. The tales that charm away the wakeful night in Araby, romances, legends, penned for solace by the light of monkish lamps, fictions for ladies of their love devised by youthful squires, adventures endless, spun by the dismantled warrior in old age, out of the bowels of those very thoughts in which his youth did first extravagate, these spread like day, and something in the shape of these will live till man shall be no more. Dumb yearnings, hidden appetites are ours, and they must have their food. Our childhood sits, our simple childhood sits upon a throne that hath more power than all the elements.
Sir Ian McKellen was reading from The Prelude by William Wordsworth. The music was composed by John Hall and performed by John Hall on soprano saxophone and Neil McColl on guitar. The Prelude was produced in Manchester by Susan Roberts, with sound design by Steve Brook.
And you can hear the second part of this reading from The Prelude at the same time next week. Maria Frostrup talks to the Booker-winning author Anne Enright about her new novel set in Dublin in the days before the financial crash. That's in Open Book after the news. But first, a word from Jenny Murray.
On Thursday, I'll be talking to Kate McCann in her only radio interview about how she and her family have coped since the disappearance of her daughter Madeline. It's 4 years since Madeline went missing on a family holiday in Portugal. The case has dropped from the headlines, but Kate is determined to keep her daughter's profile in the news. We'll discuss her new book, Madeline, which is being published on Thursday, Madeline's 8th birthday.
And that's in Woman's Hour at 10 o'clock on Thursday morning.